Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You can't count on much these days.
No way, Jim! This is incredible!
But you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus.
Here we go! This time for real!
Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday, starting with a classic Week 1 NFC North rivalry between the Lions and the Packers. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today and count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey everyone, it's Boomer and Geo, and if you're into New York sports or you want straight talk about what's really going on in the sports world, Boomer and Geo is your show.
We're covering it all. Yankees wins, Giants drama, national headlines, and whatever chaos the day brings on the field and off.
No filler, no filters, just real conversation, and believe me, plenty of laughs every weekday morning.
We don't hold back, and we don't waste your time. We get to what actually matters.
That's Boomer and Geo, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
What's up, guys? I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. We're heading towards the home stretch of the WNBA season, and there is so much to get into every episode. Twice a week, I'm joined by one of my amazing co-hosts as we dissect the biggest games, performances, and even some off-court drama. The playoffs are quickly approaching, and now is the best time to tune in. Who will come away as this year's champion? The competition is heating up, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya, how are we? Episode number 554 of the Rico, the Mets get set to try to do something that none of us believe they are capable of doing. Save their season. They begin the final road trip of the year. Three games against the Cubs, three games against the Marlins, where, let's be honest, they have to win every single game. You cannot bank on the Pirates helping you. You cannot bank on even the Brewers, who may have everything wrapped up by the weekend, helping you. This is a time of the year where, as much as we don't think it's going to happen, and it's very unlikely to happen, the Mets have to go on the road, and they have to leave no doubt. And they have to win every single game. And if they somehow do, if somehow they win three in Chicago, three against Miami, and end this season on a six-game winning streak, if they miss the playoffs, despite doing that, I think we'll all still be very angry with this team and blame this team and say you brought it upon yourself, which is all true. But at least this team would show us a tiny bit of something going into the offseason. So I won't feel better by missing the playoffs by going 6-0. And well, the Reds matched them step for step, so there's nothing you could do. This is still a team that blew a playoff spot. This would still be a team that choked it away. But at least, at the very least, they would show us something. Because I think going into this final road trip against the Marlins and against the Cubs, most of us, not just me, just believe this team is gutless. That's how we feel. And we have got no reason to believe otherwise. So, six games with a chance to change that. But what I ask anybody who has a level of confidence would be, why? this team has shown us since the middle of June, they are what they are. And it defies me that they're this bad. Like, I can't really just give you a simple baseball reason to describe why they've been the worst team in baseball since the middle of June. I know their starting pitching has been bad and their starting pitching has been inconsistent, but it's more than just that. They have found ways to lose on such a ridiculous, consistent basis since the middle of June that I don't think it's as easy as, well, it's the starting pitching. Is there something wrong with the structure of this roster? Is there something wrong with the locker room? And I joked about this on WFN on Monday, but it's sort of true. You kind of know that when this season is over, there's going to be some kind of story out of The Athletic or from the New York Post or wherever that tries to put all of this on something inside the locker room. And I don't know what that is. I mean, whether it's guys not liking each other or guys not pulling together like we heard after 2023, that is basic stuff that we will hear all the reasons why this team crumbled. And what is going to be very difficult for me and for all of us is to figure out a coherent game plan on how to fix this during the offseason. I'm not going to lie to you. Even though the season is not over quite yet, I've already given it a lot of thought. I've already been trying to break it down. Like, is it major changes? And then what does the major changes even look like? You know, Joe B was on with us on Monday, and he said something that it's so true. And that is, hey, priority number one, keep Pete Alonso. Why would it not be? Priority number two, keep Edwin Diaz. Why would it not be? But after you do that, after you do the two most important things, which is literally keeping two players from this team, then what? I mean, we're going to go on an offseason off of one of the most disappointing seasons in the history of the franchise and literally say, we'll just keep those guys and we'll go from there. So I'm giving it a lot of thought. Hopefully we don't get to this point a week from now where we are talking about the offseason that early. And I'll come up with some kind of coherent plan. But I think what makes this difficult for me right now as a Met fan is I'm having a very difficult time pinpointing what the hell has gone on for the last 3.5 months. Now, we do begin the Rico with some levity. We have received many emails over the last few days, weeks, and really all year. We appreciate that. TheRicoB@gmail.com. Rob from Mount Laurel, New Jersey, actually wrote a poem, a short poem, ode to the 2025 Mets. Waste of space, waste of time, waste of all my hard-earned dimes, wasted energy, wasted care, wasted of 7-line ticket fares, waste of talent, waste of players, can't silence the naysayers, waste of season, but most of all, waste of our love of Mets baseball. Very well written. Very depressing, but very, very well written. I do remember a couple of weeks ago, Pete Hoffman said right here on the Rico, the only way for the Mets to turn this season around is to truly hit the rock bottom of falling out of a playoff spot. None of that happened until late Sunday afternoon after the Mets lost the second game to the Nationals, lost 2 out of 3, and Cincinnati was able to hold on with a 1-0 victory against the Cubbies, sweeping that 4-game series. That was the first time, basically all year, the Mets have been out of a playoff spot since the first week of the year. So, Hoff, I ask you, now that that happened, now that we have had a day and a half to linger as a non-playoff team, do you really think this is the moment that the team is going to be sparked?
No. I'm sorry. I wish it happened sooner. I could fake optimism and say, yes, because they're going to fight back and they're going to show. But then I'm going to laugh it off and say, fight back. They haven't fought shit. This is who they've been all season long. They've been a team that's been hanging around that can, you know, hang with teams, good teams, bad teams. But when it comes down to finishing, whether it's coming again, they're 0-67 in the ninth inning on for a reason, right? Being down going into the ninth inning, they're 0-67 for a reason, because they give up. They flatline. And with 6 games to go, I can't see it changing.
Yeah, that's the tough thing to imagine, that all of a sudden a team that has had a glass jaw all year is going to respond in the biggest of moments. I've thought a lot about 1999, because I know Gary Cohen brought it up on the broadcast on Sunday, how in 1999, the Mets had collapsed. They started collapsing. They got swept by the Philadelphia Phillies, and they came home with a six-game homestand after they dropped out of a playoff spot. And there are a few big differences between 1999 and this year, as much as I try to find the similarities. Number one, the 1999 Mets, until really that one-week stretch where they collapsed in September, they were a very good team. Or at least they were a team winning a lot more than what they were losing. So that stretch of games that they ran into genuinely felt like, all right, they're just playing bad baseball. That's it. Like, simple as that. Because the sample size of the rest of the year kind of showed us that the Mets were a good team. You contrast that to this team. This is not just a stretch of time in which they're not playing well. In fact, they were playing well. They were playing some of their better baseball until they lost these two games to the Nationals. It wasn't a huge sample size, obviously, but you know, they snapped the losing streak. They beat Texas. They win two out of three against the Padres. They win the first game against the Nationals. I know it doesn't feel like anything, but they'd won four out of five games, which for this Met team is like a decent run. And they respond to that by losing the last two games against Washington. And also in 1999, like, they came home for that six-game homestand. Now, they did get help. You know, Cincinnati got tripped up. Houston also got tripped up. And so it gave the Mets the chance to have a 4-2 homestand, which is what it was, and have that be allowed to make up the ground they needed to make up. So not only did the Reds get tripped up, but the Mets were able to go home and win just enough games to force that one-game playoff. The Mets are not going home. They're going on the road. They're facing two teams that have semblances of things to play for. The Chicago Cubs still need to hold on to that number one wildcard spot. That is not a lock. They have a three-game lead with six to go. The Padres have the tiebreaker. The Cubs have to win a game here or there to make sure they host the wild card series at Wrigley Field. The Brewers could be in the same situation in terms of trying to lock down the number one seed in the National League. So I think that is a huge, huge difference. What I do remember about 99 is a part of why I believed they were going to collapse is they had collapsed a year earlier. 1998 was one of the big underrated collapse in Met history. They lost their last five games of the year. They got swept by the Atlanta Braves. And even though the Chicago Cubs and the San Francisco Giants weren't very good, the Mets blew all of their opportunities to at least get to a one-game playoff. So in 99, they were on the heels of another collapse, but they were able to stop it. I mean, they won their last four games of the year, which, what is that really saying? But they were given opportunities, a few opportunities, to overcome their own mistakes because the teams ahead of them were losing. You flash forward to this year. They're not going to a comfort zone of playing at home with the Pirates to end the season like the case in 1999. They're going to Chicago. They're going to Milwaukee. That's number one. So the Met road is a lot more difficult than the road that saved them in 1999. And number two, and I could be wrong about this because there's obviously no evidence. Who knows about Cincinnati? I just have this bad feeling that the Cincinnati Reds are not going to lose. That, you know, they overcame getting swept by the A's a week ago, and they've responded. And I sort of think that that's going to continue over the next 3 days. So the Mets are not only not going to help themselves, considering we have no evidence that they will, I'm also concerned that the Cincinnati Reds, who are four games above 500, who have finally taken a playoff spot for the first time all season long, Great American Ballpark was starting to jump in the Chicago series. You could see the attendance going up day by day. I almost think for the next 3 days, there's going to be 30,000 people there. They're going to respond to it. And I just have this weird feeling that the Reds are not going to help out the Mets the way they did 26 years ago.
Just to correct, you kept saying Milwaukee. They're going to Miami.
No, the Reds are going to Milwaukee.
Oh, right.
The Reds are going to Milwaukee.
Got it. Okay.
Not us. We've already been to Milwaukee. Got our asses swept.
And we're going to Miami, by the way, who are one of the hottest teams in baseball right now. They've won 10 out of 11 games.
They're playing good baseball. They altered their rotation for Sandy Alcantara to make that start on Friday. So the Marlins are clearly trying to stick it to the Mets. I mean, they are alive technically, but they're trying to stick it to the Mets. And we know about the Mets' history against Miami, not just in the past, but certainly this year when the Mets lost 3 out of 4. And I mentioned this on the Rico the other day. The Mets have had one road trip this entire season in which they have had a winning record. One. And that's all the way back in May when they split with the Dodgers and won all three games in Colorado. They have had no other road trip this entire season where they've had a winning trip. And I think we'd all agree that 3-3 ain't going to cut it. Unless you believe the Reds are going 2-4 and the Diamondbacks are going 2-4. Unless you believe that's going to happen over the next 6 days. 3-3 is not going to cut it. I don't even think 4-2 cuts it. To me, it is border. It is 5-1, 6-0, and hope you get help to make the postseason in the final week.
It's got to be 6-0. I think that's the only chance the Mets have. I think the Reds are going to go. I think the Reds are going 6-0 too. I truly do. I think that they're going to the Pirates.
They are facing Paul Skeens on Wednesday. That is one huge positive for help.
Let me ask you a question. Does he have like an innings limit? Does he have a cap? Are they going to pull him at 4 2/3? Or are they going to let him go all nine? Like Nolan McLain, let's be honest, Nolan McLain, they might pull him at six innings because, hey, listen, or five and they might pull him at like 5 2/3 just because they want to be at that innings limit.
So Nolan McLain, because he only went five innings a couple of days ago to lose his rookie status in his last regular season start of the year, would have to pitch 7 1/3 innings to lose his rookie status. So while that can happen, because Nolan has had a start where he went eight, it is unlikely to happen. So his short start, five innings, if you want to call it short, relatively short for him, I think did enough to keep him from that. As far as Skeens is concerned, it's going to be his last start of the year. He's got a 2.03 ERA. That matchup, by the way, on Wednesday is Paul Skeens against Hunter Green. I mean, you talk about a pitching matchup. You talk about a battle. And that game is actually starting about an hour and a half before the Met game starts. So you got a chance to really watch that. That is a duel for the ages. But let's get to the pitching. Let's get to the way this thing should be lined up over the final week of the year. But before we get there, there is something I want to address from the last game against the Nationals that I didn't really get into on the last Rico Bronya, but I'm very passionate about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You can't count on much these days.
No way, Jim. This is incredible.
But you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus.
Here we go. This time for real.
Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday, starting with a classic Week 1 NFC North rivalry between the Lions and the Packers. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today and count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
I'm no tech genius, but I knew if I wanted my business to crush it, I needed a website now. Thankfully, Bluehost made it easy. I customized, optimized, and monetized everything exactly how I wanted with AI. In minutes, my site was up. I couldn't believe it. The search engine tools even helped me get more site visitors. Whatever your passion project is, you can set it up with Bluehost. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, what have you got to lose? Head to Bluehost.com to start now.
The idea that, and I have said plenty about Carlos Mendoza and the way he has screwed things up over the last few weeks and how much blame he deserves for this collapse. And there are a lot of moves he's made that I did not like. But the Manaea-Holmes tag team flip-flop, in my humble opinion, is not one of them. You know, Tiki brought it up on the air Monday. He's like, boy, why'd the Mets get too cute? Holmes goes first. They're successful against the Padres on Tuesday. Holmes does a good job. Manaea does a good job. Why the flip-flop? Well, a couple of things. Number one, yes, the Nationals changed their lineup a little bit against the left-hander with Manaea starting by moving Dylan Cruz up to the number two hole. But the Nationals are a predominantly left-hand hitting team. So it made sense. It makes sense to say, let's go Manaea first. Let's go home second. So I agree with the strategy. I think it made sound sense. I don't think just because you won on Tuesday with Clay going before Sean that that has to be the permanent order. That's ridiculous because of one game, that has to be the permanent order. Number two, yes, Sean Manaea failed when he gave up a two-run home run to Nathan Nunez, and the defense failed when allowing the first of the three runs. The Mets did not lose this game because of Sean Manaea and Clay Holmes.
FanDuel's getting you ready for the NFL season with an offer you won't want to miss. New customers can bet just $5 and get $300 in bonus bets if you win. That's right, pick a bet, bet $5, and if it wins, you'll unlock $300 in bonus bets to use all across the app. You can build parlays, bet player props, ride the live lines. Whatever your style, FanDuel has you covered. The NFL season is almost here. The only question is, are you ready to play? Visit FanDuel.com/2400 to download the FanDuel app today and get started.
Must be 21 plus and present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, permitted parishes only, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, or Wyoming. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT-STEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York or visit oasas.ny.gov/gambling. Standard text messaging rates apply. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
If you combine the tag team, they went 6 2/3 innings and they allowed three runs. Yes, all three came from Manaea, but the tag team pitched into the seventh inning and allowed three runs. That's good enough. I'm sorry. That is good enough. The Mets lost this game, not only because of their defense, which helped set up those runs being scored, but more than anything, they lost this game because against Jake Irvin, who had a 5.7 ERA, and Mitchell Parker, who had a 5.8 ERA, the Mets scored two measly runs. That's why they lost the game. They didn't lose the game because of the order of the tag team. That is too simplistic. That's also not necessarily true. Like, yes, it would have been nice to not give up any runs, of course. I mean, you can keep a game going if you don't give up any runs. You should win a game if you don't give up any runs. But to put this game on the order of the tag team, I think is ridiculous. And I don't think is fair to actually what happened on Sunday afternoon. So I know that we're all in the mood to be picking on everything this manager does and blaming everything this manager does. Trust me, there's plenty of blame to go around. And there's plenty of things to criticize him for, which I think we've done throughout this season and certainly on the last edition of the Rico. But I have a major issue that the order of Manaea and Holmes somehow led to the Mets losing. They did their job. The Met offense didn't do their job.
Well, I mean, can you say that Manaea didn't have as good of a performance as he did the previous eight innings? I mean, you could say that.
Of course, but are you pinning that on him starting the game?
No, I just think he failed. And that's kind of what it's been all season. We've sat here and talked about, I think, I forgot which game it was recently, where you talked about how Peterson should have been taken out and they should have brought in Tyler Rogers. And I'm like, yeah, but how many times has that happened? They bring in Tyler Rogers and then he gives up a blue base hit, gives up a couple runs, and they lose. They blow the game that way. Everything that Mendoza has done has backfired. There's been no right move. He can't do anything right with this team.
But that's just saying, woe is me, there's nothing you can do.
Did you
have a problem with Sean Manaea starting the game?
No, I didn't. But my point is, it doesn't make a difference what he does. This team continues to find ways to fail him.
It doesn't make a difference because the Met offense on Sunday didn't score enough runs.
Right.
Like, that's why, yeah, it doesn't make a difference. I mean, if they had started Clay Holmes and used Manaea right after, do I know how it plays out? No idea. I mean, could things be playing out differently? Of course. Do I know Clay Holmes goes four scoreless innings? Not at all. Like, you can't make that assumption. All I know is the idea of the tag team, the idea of taking Clay Holmes and taking Sean Manaea and putting them together is to serve the purpose that was also served on Sunday, which is get it deep into the game so you're not going to your bullpen in the fourth or fifth inning and don't give up a lot of runs. Okay, well, they got into the seventh inning, which is not a lot of individual innings. It's only three from Manaea and 3 2/3 from Clay Holmes. It's not like they went that deep, but when you combine them and it's 6 2/3, that's not terrible. Going to your bullpen in the seventh inning with one of your best relievers in Brooks Raley, you would say pretty good. So they essentially did their job. That's my only point. Like, they didn't fail.
Right.
What failed was the Mets didn't score any runs.
Against guys that had ERAs over 5.
Exactly. Now that leads us to this final road trip of the year. So Carlos Mendoza has announced one thing as of the time of this recording, and that is the fact that David Peterson is going to pitch on Tuesday. Am I in love with David Peterson pitching on Tuesday? No. Do I trust David Peterson on Tuesday? No. The Mets, though, if you look at the rotation, had really very few choices. I mean, think about it. What options did they have to pitch on Tuesday? And I'll tell you what they had. The option, forgetting Kodai Senga, just assuming Kodai Senga is not an option here. The only other option they had was Jonathan because of the way the days are lining up. So Jonathan pitched on Thursday. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. He could have pitched on normal rest and opened up this series. So those were the options. Jonathan or David Peterson. I don't really love either option, if we're being honest. I mean, it feels unfair to ask Jonathan, A, on regular rest, something he hasn't done much this season, and then B, again, with the season on the line at Wrigley Field, this historic building, hey, can you go out there and save us? Can you go out there and deliver 6 scoreless innings? So I didn't think there were great options in terms of how to open this series up. I'm sure most people listening are going to say, oh, I prefer Jonathan. How can you not? It's not that I don't trust Jonathan in an individual start more than David Peterson. I just think when you look at the circumstances, it feels almost unreasonable to say, all right, Jonathan, go out there and save us. The other thing is I was going through his season to see how often had he pitched on regular rest, 4 days rest in which you come back and you pitch.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You can't count on much these days.
No way, Jim! This is incredible!
But you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount+.
Here we go! This time for real!
Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday, starting with a classic Week 1 NFC North rivalry between the Lions and the Packers. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today and count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount+.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
I'm no tech genius, but I knew if I wanted my business to crush it, I needed a website now. Thankfully, Bluehost made it easy. I customized, optimized, and monetized everything exactly how I wanted with AI. In minutes, my site was up. I couldn't believe it. The search engine tools even helped me get more site visitors. Whatever your passion project is, you can set it up with Bluehost. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, what have you got to lose? Head to Bluehost.com to start now.
And he did it. If my math is correct, only twice or three times this entire season. So when we say normal rest, it probably should get a new name. It ain't that normal. I mean, it's traditionally normal rest, but in 2025, it's not. So between asking him to do something he hasn't done very often and also hasn't done at the major league level, that has not happened yet at the major league level to pitch on 4 days rest, what is known as regular rest. So I didn't love that option. So I do unfortunately think, despite my lack of confidence in David Peterson, he's their best option for Tuesday. I mentioned a few days ago I would have tag-teamed him with Clay Holmes and started Sean Manaea. Now, how that would have worked out, who knows? Because it's not like Sean Manaea delivered. He gave up three runs in those three innings. And it only looks okay because the tag team was effective. But knowing where we're set up, would you have rather have gone to Tong on Tuesday over David Peterson?
Here's the thing, and it's not like it's not that there's a good option here, but I truly don't trust David Peterson anymore. Like it's one of those things where it's like I can't trust the Jets or Giants to win a game until they actually win a game. I can't trust David Peterson to do anything for me. Like Jonah Tong, at least in his this would be his fifth start now.
Yeah,
his next start. Like I know he had that two-thirds of an inning stinker that was atrocious, but the other starts have been okay. He's fought and battled back through situations. He shows a little bit more fight, and I feel like I don't say I completely trust him, but I have more trust in him than David Peterson.
Well, I'm very desperate, and I think we all should be, because the Mets need to win to survive. I mean, they could easily lose the opener of this series, the Reds could win, and then all of a sudden – the Mets are truly two games back with five to go. So what I would do in the opener of this series is I would start David Peterson, and I would actually have Jonah Tong available out of the bullpen. So it's almost like I'm forming a new tag team Tuesday night against Chicago. Is that ideal? Nothing is ideal. I don't think anything about this final road trip is ideal. But it gives them the option, if David Peterson is showing signs early of not being able to go deep into this game. And look, I wouldn't allow him to go deep into this game unless he's just perfect right out of the gate. I think the track record of Peterson over his last handful of starts, really last seven starts, shows you can't rely him to go deep. So I would have Jonah Tong available out of the bullpen on Tuesday. If David Peterson pitches a great game and I never use Jonah Tong, fantastic. If I do use Jonah Tong, I've got the new tag team, whatever you want to call it, Peterson and Tong on Tuesday. Now, that leads to a fair follow-up, which is, okay, great. What about Wednesday? If you use Tong, you can now move everybody up a date, which means Brandon Sproat, who who I didn't think was terrible in his last start on Friday, would come back and pitch on regular rest, traditionally regular rest, on Wednesday. That would then allow Nolan McClain to come back, who also didn't do a terrible job on Saturday, for him to come back and pitch on Thursday. So everybody moves up a lever at this point. That would then set up, and really this comes down to, did you use Tong on Tuesday or not? But my attitude is, I got to survive. So I'm moving everybody up because I need to win games. I need to find a way. Because the more I win, the longer I keep the season going. It's like extending a basketball game late, where you want to extend the game. Every time the Mets win, the Reds can't put more distance between them. So if the Mets win every single game, right? Let's say they shockingly sweep Chicago. They win the first two games against Miami. They keep 162 relevant. If the Reds got tripped up, even better. But even if they don't and they win every single game, you still put yourself in a spot where your season is alive for game 162. The more you win, the more you survive. So again, David Peterson, Jonah Tong, both available on Tuesday. Brandon Sproat on Wednesday. Nolan McClain on Thursday. This sets up Holmes and Manaea to now be available on Friday, Saturday. And depending on how and where you used David Peterson and Jonah Tong on Tuesday, they would then be available to re-help you out by pitching either out of the bullpen or maybe using some kind of tag team. So I know it puts you in a spot on Saturday and Sunday in which everything's up in the air. Did I use Tong? Can I start him? What did David Peterson do? Did I split up Clay Holmes and Sean Manaea? But it's about surviving Chicago. And so that's why I'd have Tong available out of the bullpen Tuesday. I'd move Sproat up. I'd move McClain up because I need to survive Chicago, and I will worry about Miami when I get to Miami. That's how I would aggressively handle this bullpen going into the final six games.
So you're saying they're not going to give Kodai Senga a shot?
I mean, it's tough to, like, I was ready after one good start to call Kodai up, but the Mets clearly don't believe in him. I mean, the way they talked about him even after that good start, what Mendy has said even after his last bad start, if they activate Kodai Senga, it feels like it's just throwing crap against the wall, which, based on the way I laid things out, could be an option. I mean, if you're going to be aggressive to keep your season going, then Kodai Senga could very well start Friday or Saturday in Miami. I'm open to it. It just feels like the Mets aren't really open to it.
Well, okay. I understand what the Mets' point is, that, you know, hey, we got to win these games, and he may not be the best pitcher to throw in there to start a game. But on the other hand, too, like, you're using guys like Peterson or Tong in this scenario coming out of the bullpen potentially.
Yeah.
Well, how about we use Senga? Like, I mean, is he that deficient now? Is he that done that we can't even maybe get an inning out of him compared to maybe some other bullpen arms?
No, especially when you got Dickie Lovelady on your roster. Like, yeah, you can absolutely add him to this mix. And I think the way I describe my plan, not that Mendy's going to follow it, is that by the time you get to Miami, you're going to want to add a reinforcement. And Kodai Senga can very well be that reinforcement. But I need Nolan McClain on the mound as soon as possible. Not that he's a savior, but even in his bad outings, if you want to call Saturday a bad outing, he's still effective. You know, he still finds a way to fight through five innings and pitch well for you. So that's how I'd line up the rotation. It is not going to be easy, especially when you look at what Chicago's throwing at you. Cade Horton, who's had this great year, he's basically gone five scoreless, six innings, one run every time he's out there, is toeing the rubber to open this series. And oh yeah, one other thing to keep in mind, and this is where things get really, really confusing and really, really weird. But Hoff, have you checked the weather in Chicago?
No, but I'm imagining it's going to be windy and maybe rainy.
There is some rain in the forecast.
Oh boy.
And who knows, maybe that's the best thing that could happen, considering last year, the rain, which I know annoyed us at the time. I mean, we were freaking out, and we all thought the Mets were done because of this rain, and it wasn't helping. But maybe the rain could be a good thing. But there is some rain in the forecast on Wednesday and Thursday. I don't think it's enough to cancel these games, But keep in mind two things. It's not just do they rein a game out and how the hell do they play it, because there is no time. Last thing we want is to come back for game 162 on a Monday for the second straight year. But hey, if they're alive, I guess I'll take it. You know, if the game matters.
Right, great. Yeah.
Because if they're alive for a game 162 on a Monday after the season ends, that means the Reds got tripped up, and that means the Mets are a win away from making the postseason. But the other thing that's worrisome about rain is the pitching we just talked about. You know, you don't want to start a game, have there be a rain delay, and have that completely wipe out who is ever starting that game. So there's no great way to handle it. You almost have to trust that the umpires and the Chicago Cubs are not going to start a game that's in danger of just facing some kind of significant rain delay. But that is something to keep in the back of your mind as they open up this three-game series in Chicago against the Cubs.
Well, the other thing, too, is, I mean, if they have to rain out one of these games for some reason, they need to do a doubleheader, that screws up the whole thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, doubleheaders are they're pains in the asses. It's not ideal. But look, I think the odds are they're going to play. It's not going to be a problem. I know Major League Baseball does whatever it can to get these games in. So even if there's a really long rain delay, they will play. Or if they move a game up, which Major League Baseball has shown you this year they're willing to do, they will play. This offense has got to find a way to hit good pitching, though. Matthew Boyd is the guy they're seeing in game two. He has had a really tough year, another lefty. And what I would do, assuming Tyrone Taylor is activated, and that is the thought, that Tyrone Taylor is going to be activated for the beginning of this series, that's the guy I'm playing. I mean, I have seen enough of Cedric Mullins. I am still scarred off of what happened on Sunday with him not running that ball out and turning what should have been an inside-the-park home run. Instead, because he's sightseeing between first and second, staring at Daylan Lya laying on the ground, it turned into a gift single. I've seen enough of Cedric Mullins, haven't we all? I've seen enough of Jose Siri, haven't we all? So even though Tyrone Taylor was not exactly Willie Mays before he got hurt offensively, we know what he can do defensively. We know he has some guts. I would just lean towards, especially facing two lefties in this series, I would just lean towards playing Tyrone Taylor. That's where I'm at with center field.
Can I ask a dumb question?
There's no dumb question, just dumb teams that we root for.
So remember in 2022, we were begging the Mets to call up Francisco Alvarez. And what did they do?
They called him up with three games to go. What, you want Carson Benj up here or something?
Jet Williams, Carson Benj. Listen, I'm not taking anything away from Tyrod Taylor, because I actually am.
Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, I know. My head's up my ass right now. Tyrone Taylor, thank you. I'm not taking anything away from him, because I think his defense has never been an issue. That's the reason why I didn't want to go for Cedric Mullins or anybody else, unless it was Harrison Bader. But that being said, though, if you're looking for a spark at this point in time, which is something the Mets kind of need, maybe that's what you do.
Yeah, I think my lesson from Alvarez in 2022 is it's not what you do. You know, next year we're going to see a lot of Carson Benj. We may see a lot of Jet Williams. I don't think Benj is ready right now. Is Jet Williams ready, especially playing center field at the major league level? Probably not. So what I would do, as unsexy as it is just put the guy who knows how to play center field in center field and let him play. And that's Tyrone Taylor. So I don't think that's the way to go. I don't think you make a desperate plea to AAA. But, hey, at this point.
But Ev, like, at this point in time, too, like you said, like, I understand Taylor coming back may bring a spark to that position anyway. At least it'll bring some sort of, defensively gifted player. But, I mean, this team needs a spark.
I just don't think either guy is necessarily ready. That's the other thing. When you have guys who are ready the way these pitchers were, specifically Nolan McClain, I think you call the guy up. When you have players that are not fully ready, fully baked, it's like taking a meal out before the oven has fully cooked the meal. It's going to taste raw, and it's not going to taste good. You're going to spit it out.
Well, I like some blood on the steak. I'm okay with that.
Ugh, oh, God. Too much blood on the steak is disgusting. I don't like that at all.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, if you just get past the blood part of it, it's freaking amazing. But, okay, so how about this? When Taylor comes up, they're going to have to get rid of somebody. Who are they getting rid of?
Jose Siri. I'm done. That'd be my answer. Jose, the Mets have put together the worst collection of center fielders maybe this sport has ever seen. I mean, when you look at Jose Siri in the brief time he's been active, Tyrone Taylor, Jeff McNeil's been fine when he's been out there, but our lasting image is the misjudged fly ball from a couple of weeks ago. And you almost don't blame him when you're asking somebody who's never really played the position to play it on a full-time basis. But center field has been an unmitigated disaster. And when we do off-season Ricos about David Stearns' trade deadline and David Stearns' off-season, the building of center field is going to have to be studied. I mean, we are going to have to really analyze how bad of a job he did.
Oh, wait. The center field? What about like the starting pitching?
Well, I was just debatable. Saying center field. There's plenty of other things to get to. I was just focusing on center field. Now let's get to some of your emails, therico@gmail.com. The title of this episode is Can the Mets Save Their Season? Joseph Kwan writes, Can the Mets save the season? No. That was his email. Very simple. Greg writes, guys, you've been saying it all season. The Mets have a LD offense. They're not hitting the ball. If only our analytics-driven front office had a stat to measure how often a player gets a hit, they could have traded for players who do that more often. Oh, wait, there is such a stat. And it's the one stat we're told doesn't matter anymore. Batting average. I decided to do a comparison to the team I grew up rooting for. Do you know what the season batting averages were for players on the 1986 Mets? I do. I looked them up. And I used a lineup from game 6 because it was a game they had to win. So it's a best version of themselves. Here are the batting averages, by the way, from that lineup. Lenny Dykstra, 295. Wally Backman, 320. Keith Hernandez, 310. Gary Carter, 255. Darryl, 259. Ray Knight, 298. Mookie, 289. And Rafael Santana, 218. If you include Ray Knight's 289, they have 5 players hitting 290 or better. That's 1 through 8 having a batting average of 180, 280. Not one single everyday player on today's Mets has a 280 batting average. How is that even possible? Here, for the sake of comparison, is the best version of a lineup I could call to construct for the current Mets with their batting averages. Lindor, 267. Soto, 266. Alonso, 272. Vientos, 237. Nimmo, 260. McNeil, 251. Beatty, 255. Alvarez, 258. Mullins, 183. That's his time with the Mets, which I agree with citing that. That's averages out to a 249 batting average. That is lower than every single player in the 86 lineup, except for Rafael Santana. The highest batting average of the current regulars is Pete Alonso's 272. He would have had the 6th highest batting average on the 86 team. I know the game has changed. Just counting hits doesn't matter anymore. But isn't this still a game you win by scoring more runs? And maybe, just maybe, getting more hits would help with that. How many times have the Mets left a country on base this season? Maybe another hit would have helped. I'll leave you with this last one. In 1986, the entire Mets team got 1,462 hits. And that's with pitchers batting. We're basically at the end of 2025. And this year, the Mets have 1,307 hits. That's with Mark Vientos or Starling Marte batting instead of Ron Darling or Sid Fernandez. Yet they somehow have fewer than 150 hits.
Wow.
But it's not by accident. They were built this way. In this case, the analytics are Dr. Frankenstein, and the 2025 Mets are Frankenstein's monster. A cobbled together assortment of bits and pieces where individually maybe each part works. But you can tell just by looking at them, they're not put together right. For the love of God, can they get one guy who can hit 300? Thanks for the therapy, Greg. Your thoughts on that, the batting average comparisons of the 86 Mets to this Met team?
Well, first of all, what was his name, Greg?
Greg.
Greg, I love you. But tell me how many people, how many hitters in baseball right now bat over 300? I'm just going to take a guess. There may be 10.
No, I mean, there's none. It's an anomaly to hit over 300.
Right, exactly. So I get, yes, the game has changed. The fact that, like, Alonso and Lindor and Soto are all batting around the same average, I mean, that's kind of what everyone's batting around is 270. And actually, and Alonso, this is a good year for him. He's usually a 260 hitter.
Yeah, look, I know that Greg addressed it by saying the sport has changed. It really has. Like, use the comp of what the league is hitting. This year, the Mets team batting average is the league team batting average, right? It's 249. That is the league batting average in 2025. In 1986, the league batting average was 258. Like, it's a 10-point difference. I mean, not that that's something to write home about, but my point is, you see that it's just different. Now, here's the point that Greg made, which is completely fair. You want to construct a lineup that has balance. You want to construct a lineup that has differences in its order. And having a guy, if you can find one, who can hit close to 300 would certainly help. But I ask you this. If you took Luis Arraez, and he's actually had sort of a down year for San Diego in terms of what he's done in the past, but he's hitting 287. So that would be the highest team batting average or the highest batting average by a player on this Met team. He's a career 316 hitter. He hit 318 last year, 300 the year before, 314 the year before that. I mean, the guy's won three consecutive batting titles between 22 to 24. If you took him and you replaced the designated hitter slot on the New York Mets with Luis Arraez's production, which is a 287 average, but only seven home runs and only a 705 OPS, would the Mets truly be better? You know what I mean? You want batting average. If I just gave you that, if I gave you that, those statistics combined as your designated hitter, and you have to take the good and you've got to take the bad, are the New York Mets a better team?
No.
That's the problem. Like, that's why I understand the point, but I don't think it's necessarily true. Like, their DH spot this season. You want to hear the numbers from the DH spot this year for the New York Mets?
I'm scared, but yes, I do.
Believe it or not, it's not as bad as you think, though it's not great. 253. Okay, so the batting average, and using Arraez as the example, because he's the perfect example of a high batting average, not much anything else kind of guy, that's an average that's about 35 points below what Arraez is hitting this year. But the DH spot has also provided 23 home runs, 79 RBIs, and a 760 OPS. That's 50 points higher than Arraez. That's 17 more home runs. So is the batting average being 25 points higher really worth giving all of that other stuff up? And if you go through some of the 1986 Mets, obviously not Darryl and Keith, but Wally Backman and even Lenny Dykstra, think about what those numbers are going to show you. Those other numbers that we're not mentioning, which is power numbers, OPS numbers. And I know, but you need balance. I agree you need balance, but that's why I brought up, like, if you took a high average guy and replaced it, are you truly better off?
Well, that's kind of where McNeil was supposed to be. I mean, let's be serious. McNeil was supposed to be that high average guy and not really a lot of home runs and, you know, not driving in a lot of RBIs, but being on base and getting a hit when you really need one. And he's not been that guy for the past, what, 3 years now?
Yeah. No, you're right. Now, in fairness to the 86 Mets, I'm looking at Lenny Dykstra's numbers. The OPS would have been fine. Wally Backman's OPS would have been fine because he got on base plenty with that 320 batting average. It's really the RBIs and the lack of power. And the truth is, like, yeah, if you can balance it out by having a guy or two in your lineup that's going to produce that, it's worth it. But I don't think it's just as simple as they need to have a higher team batting average. As much as we'd all like to see it, I don't think it's necessarily as simple as that.
I don't disagree, though, where I do like the fact that when it's a big-time situation, and this is where I will always disagree with people on this, on-base percentage versus batting average, I don't care how different they are. If a guy's batting 290 and his on-base is 310, to me, I don't care because I'll take that 290 batting average compared to a guy that's going to hit 210 and maybe hit a home run. I just want to get bat on ball and put it in play. And that, and sometimes that's all you need. And that's what the Mets have been missing basically all season. Look at Brandon Nimmo the other day. All he had to do was put the bat on the ball.
No, I know. That at-bat was like when the Mets missed the playoffs, and yes, I used the word when. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I eat those words over the next 6 days on the Rico, but when the Mets missed the playoffs, the Brandon Nimmo at-bat may be the at-bat we have circled. Saturday night, all they need is contact. What a great victory, finally winning a game when trailing after eight innings, and he can't put the bat on the ball. I'll leave you with this positive email from Jim because there should be some positivity, just a tiny bit of it, going in to this final stretch. And I did not know this. I must have to look this up to make sure Jim isn't pulling my leg. Evan Tekart, the 103-loss Mets finished the 1993 season 6-0. So if the worst Mets team of my lifetime can do it, so can this one. But that must mean if they can't, then by definition, they're worse than the worst Mets team of my lifetime. That's some very good logic right there. Like if anybody can do it, like the 1993 Mets can do it, then hey, they've got a shot. But if they can't do it, then this just proves that the 1993 Mets was not the worst team. It was actually this team. Now I've got to look this up because the 1993 team is my first kind of team I ever watched, and it was bad. Like they went 6 months basically without a winning streak. But he is right, and here's the best part: they not only ended the season with six straight wins, the final three games that they won on a Friday, a Saturday, and Sunday happened in Miami against the Marlins.
Wow.
That was, of course, the expansion Florida Marlins. It was their first year of existence. But yeah, the Mets went in to a four-game series with the Cardinals at Shea Stadium with a record of 53-103. They then proceeded to beat the Cardinals 6-1, beat the Cardinals 1-0 in 17 innings. Holy mackerel. And then won the next day 3-2. My favorite part about this is I got to go ask my dad. He writes stuff down the way I do. Was I at any of these games? But on Wednesday night, the Mets played a 17-inning game. It lasted 4 hours and 21 minutes. The next day, they played a 1 hour, 54-minute game that ended 3-2. So they went from a 421 to a 154. But yes, the New York Mets, the 1993 Mets, the worst team of my lifetime, did win their final six games.
And do you know what the Marlins record was that year, by the way?
I mean, it wasn't as bad as the Mets record. Because no, as bad as the Mets were that year, I mean, the Marlins probably lost like in the high 90s.
They were 64-98.
There you go.
Unbelievable.
So hopefully...
Sorry, go.
Hopefully that gives hope. Does that not give us all hope that, hey, if the 93 Mets can finish 6-0, why can't this team?
I think they had more heart, though. They didn't want to be, you know, they didn't want to be that pathetic.
They had heart. Let me tell you something. They had no heart.
They had money. They had money.
Yeah, so did this team. Worst team money could buy. Anyhow, Hoff said it, and he's right. We're going to try to do Rico's every single night as the Mets march to end this season. So after game one against the Cubs, figure within a half hour of the game's ending, we'll be doing live Rico Bronyas that you can watch and consume on YouTube, or you can simply download it the next day, wherever you download your podcast. So buckle up, get set for what is probably going to be our death sentence over the next few days. The Mets wrapping up what has been a horrible 2025 season. Thank you very much for lamenting with us on a brand new edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You can't count on much these days.
No way, Jim. This is incredible.
But you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus.
Here we go. This time for real.
Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday, starting with a classic Week 1 NFC North rivalry between the Lions and the Packers. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today and count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
FanDuel's getting you ready for the NFL season with an offer you won't want to miss. New customers can bet just $5 and get $300 in bonus bets if you win. That's right, pick a bet $5, and if it wins, you'll unlock $300 in bonus bets to use all across the app. You can build parlays, bet player props, ride the live lines, whatever your style, FanDuel has you covered. The NFL season's almost here. The only question is, are you ready to play? Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan to download the FanDuel app today and get started.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.